We studied not too long ago about Jesus said, when you visited the sick, when you took people food, when you went to see them in prison, that you were doing it for Him. And so, you know, when we visit people, when we call them and check on them, that's what we're doing. We're doing it for Him. It's like we're doing it to Him. And it's very important that we continue to do that. Jesus knew when His kingdom would come into existence that example would be critical. And so He leaves this lesson tonight, these instructions to His disciples to tell them how powerful influence is. And my, it's powerful, both good and bad. Our text tonight is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16. It's a short passage, but very relevant, very useful for us today. Listen to this, verse 13. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It's then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. It's interesting that the salt from the Dead Sea, which of course was close to or in this area of Palestine, was a salt that had a lot of impurities in it. And so when salt would be taken from the Dead Sea, if it wasn't processed or worked correctly, it would end up being useless. You just throw it alongside the road. There wasn't any good use for it because it had too many impurities in it. Well, God's people, both throughout time and today, keep the world from corruption. God's people keep the world from being destroyed. We have a tremendous responsibility. You know, our influence and our living and our example keeps this world in better shape. It makes the world a better place to live. Can you imagine what the world would be like if there were no Christians whatsoever? And not a place I'd ever want to even visit. So God's people have always had that influence on society. And when you look at various periods throughout the world when society's morals and honesty and ethics and so forth decline, you'll see a time probably when Christians had less influence in the world. And just the opposite would be true as well. So disciples, Christians, influence the world for good. And think about some of the times from the beginning when there wasn't enough salt, when there wasn't enough good from God's people, and what happened to it. And of course, the first one we think about is the flood in Genesis chapter 6. That's what happened in the world then. In Genesis chapter 6, verse 5, it says, "Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." Then verse 11, "The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence." That's what God decided to do. There wasn't enough salt in the world. How much was there? Eight. Eight people out of millions? That's not a lot. That eight didn't have enough influence. It wasn't sufficient to keep the world from being destroyed. The world was too far gone. It was too corrupt. It was too wicked. It was too evil. God said the only way to fix this situation is simply to destroy all of them except this eight. And we'll start over. And that's exactly what He did. But why? There wasn't enough salt in the world. There wasn't enough of that good, powerful influence from godly people because there were too few godly people. Remember, the same thing happened in Sodom several years later, Genesis chapter 13. Genesis chapter 13, verse 13 says this: "But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord." Well, we read about Abraham and what happened in the time, and then look at chapter 18, verse 23. Abraham is talking and says, "And Abraham came near and said, 'Would you also destroy the righteous with the wicked?'" And so you remember what happened. He said, "Would you keep this city from being destroyed if we had this many people?" And he couldn't find that many good people. Then he lowered it. Kept lowering those numbers, lowering those numbers. And there were such a small number of good people that there weren't enough to keep the city from being destroyed. There wasn't enough salt. That's what he says. There wasn't enough salt. The Canaanites, Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy chapter 9, beginning in verse 3 and following. Notice what happened. These are the people who were in the land of Canaan. Deuteronomy chapter 9, beginning in verse 3. "Therefore understand today that the Lord your God is He who goes over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and bring them down before you. So you shall drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord has said to you. Do not think in your heart, after the Lord your God has cast them out before you, saying, 'Because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land,' but it's because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is driving them out from before you." That's why the Canaanites were too wicked. So God was going to drive them out. They were too wicked, and there were too many wicked people. So what did God do? Well, we know what God did. He drove out the Canaanites. From our text back in Matthew chapter 5, it says that the salt can lose its flavor. It can lose its usefulness. It can. A Christian, a disciple, can get to the point by his life where he's useless as far as influencing society. Over in Mark chapter 9, verse 50. Mark chapter 9, verse 50. Mark adds something to what we just read. "Salt is good, but if the salt loses its flavor, how will you season it? Have salt in yourselves and have peace with one another." Now notice Luke chapter 14, verse 34. "Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." A disciple can lose his usefulness. At the very end of the Bible, Revelation chapter 3, we find some people that had done that. They had lost their usefulness. Revelation chapter 3, notice verse 15 and following. This is to the church of the Laodiceans. He says this: "I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you're lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Because you say, 'I'm rich, have become wealthy, have need of nothing,' and do not know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked." That flavor of salt was lost. And so God did what? Just wants to spit him out of his mouth. Our usefulness as far as influencing society can be lost. I read not too long ago about this idea applied to modern days. And just imagine it's us that's keeping America going. By us, I mean Christians. What if that number gets smaller and smaller and smaller? What if we have less and less influence in our country? What point will it reach when there's not enough? Well, there's not enough salt. Will God do to this country what He's done to countless nations and people throughout time? I don't know. But it's certainly a very sobering thought, because it can happen. He also uses the analogy in Matthew chapter 5 about disciples being the light of the world, and that we're on a hill. We can't be hidden. And we don't take a lamp and put it under a basket, but we put it on a lampstand so it can be seen all over the house. So He says, let your light shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. You know, the Bible talks about Jesus, first of all, being the light. In John chapter 1, verse 19, or verse 9, Jesus, that aspect of Him is brought out. John chapter 1, verse 9. Notice what He says. John chapter 1, verse 9. In talking about Jesus, that was the true light which gives light to every man coming into the world. This was also prophesied by Isaiah back in Isaiah 49, that Jesus was going to be the light, and He was going to bring light into the world. So what do? We're not the source of light. We simply reflect it, don't we? When we are involved in good works and influencing people in a positive way, we're simply reflecting Christ's life. We're not the source of that. Jesus is, but we're reflecting it. That's what we're supposed to do in society. That's how we can influence society for the good, is by doing those good works. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 5, Paul uses that same analogy when he talks about Christians and their life. Now, Paul is writing to Christians here. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 5 says, you are all sons of light and sons of the day. We're not of the night nor of darkness. You know, throughout the Bible, light and darkness have always been opposed to one another. God's always represented as being light. Jesus is represented as being light. There's no sin in them. There's no impurity in them. There's no corruption in them. So Paul says, you're sons of light and sons of the day. How are we going to influence the world in a positive way if we allow darkness to be part of our lives? Well, we can influence it in a good way. We're to be people living in the light. We're to be people who are setting a good example. And sometimes I know that's difficult. We want to fit in, don't we? I think that's natural for most people. We want to fit in. But most of the world's in darkness. So by fitting in, that means we have to live in darkness as well. But the Bible says, you're sons of light. So you're going to stand out. It's like walking into a room that's pitch black, and you light a little candle, you turn on a flashlight. Well, all the people that's in that dark room do what? See that light. And boy, you stand out. Well, that's the way we're supposed to be in the world. We're to stand out, not because we want to be different, but simply because how we live will cause us to be different. Because we're going to be honest when other people are dishonest. We're not going to take things when they're not ours to take, when other people are doing it. We're not going to cheat when other people cheat. And the list goes on and on and on. We're going to stand out if we do that. Just like that light in the dark room, we're going to stand out. But we must do that. Why? Because we're sons of light, sons of the day. We don't live in darkness. The world lives in darkness. The world has lived in darkness since the beginning of time, and it's going to live in darkness until Christ comes again. But there's going to be those little areas of light. There's a little area of light tonight right here in Granby. And it may not be a huge light, but it's powerful. It's very powerful. And that's what we have to think about, is how powerful our light is. And that we're supposed to be reflecting Christ to other people in all those different areas of our life. Over a few pages back, Ephesians chapter 5, Paul uses a similar expression. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning with verse 7 and following, says, talking about idolaters and unclean people and covetous people, it says, therefore do not be partakers with them. For you were once darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. So what does it mean to walk in the day? What does it mean to walk in the light? Well, it means to do those things right there. We do what's good, we do what's right, and we do what's true. Because the world isn't going to do those things. The vast majority of the people in the world are not going to do good. Why? They live in darkness. The vast majority of the people in the world are not going to do what's right. They're not going to do what's true. Why? They live in darkness. They walk in darkness. But we're what? We're children of light. We're the light in the Lord. So we're to walk as children of the light. What do children of the light produce? The fruit of the Spirit. Those talked about over in Galatians chapter 5, right? So we produce love, and we produce joy, and we produce peace, and we produce patience and gentleness and kindness and meekness and long-suffering and all of those things. Because most of the world doesn't produce those things. But children of light, that's what we're supposed to produce. And every time we do that, every time we do something that's good, every time we do something that's right, every time we do something that's true, we make the world just a little bit brighter. In our little corner of the world, we make it a little brighter. Every time you do one of those things, every time you made a phone call today to check on somebody, you made the world just a little bit brighter. Just a little bit brighter. So every one of those things is important. Because it drives out a little bit of darkness. A little bit about what's wrong with the world. So no wonder the Bible emphasizes over and over and over again how important it is for God's people to do what's right and do good things and fill their life with good works. Because all of those things makes the world a little bit brighter. In Philippians chapter 2, a few pages on over from where you were when Paul writes to the Christians in Philippi, he says in Philippians 2, verse 15, beginning in 14, he says, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I am not run in vain or labored in vain. What do? We live in the midst of a crooked and perverse world, don't we? You don't have to live in this world very long to realize that's the kind of place it is. So what are we supposed to do? Blend in with the crooked and perverse world? No, he says just the opposite. You live in a way so that you're harmless and blameless, and you're going to shine as lights in the world. By being harmless and blameless, you're shedding light in the world. That's how powerful what we do is. And that's why it's so important that we fill our life with good works. Not to bring glory to ourselves. Remember back in Matthew 5. We don't do it for us, but we do it to bring glory to God. And every time we do something like that, we make the world a little brighter place, a little better place. In that same book, Philippians chapter 1, beginning in verse 10, this is what Christians do. That you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense until the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness, which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. We need to approve, we need to applaud, we need to praise things that are excellent. Every chance you get to approve, applaud, praise things that are excellent in God's sight, not man's sight, we need to do so. That makes the world just a little bit better place. So we can have a great influence by doing that. Saying how wonderful this is, this good thing that's happening, or whatever it is. You know, example after example. Every time that something is excellent in God's eyes and we see it, we need to approve of it and applaud it and praise it in front of people. Because by doing that, we're telling those people, these are good things. These are honorable things. These are excellent things. These are pure things. These are wholesome things. These are things that are good and right and true. And every time we do that, we bring a little more light into the world and we make the world a little bit better place. And we set a good example by doing that. In 1 Peter chapter 2, Peter writes this beginning in verse 11. He says, "Beloved, I beg you, as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." Having your conduct honorable. And when they see your good works, they may glorify God. We're to be walking in the light. We're to be setting a good example. And every time we do that, when we live in such a way that's honorable, right and true and just and honest and sincere, then we make the world a little brighter place. It's like when we drive out a little bit of darkness every time we do something that's good. That's what he's telling us. We drive out a little bit of the darkness. There's going to be a tremendous amount of darkness in this world throughout time because we live in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation in a world. It's always going to be there. But by doing these good and right things, we make the world just a little bit better place. And so the more people, the more disciples, the more Christians that do these good things, then the world's a little brighter place. And it's a better ethical place, a moral place, an upright place, an honest place. Every time we do any little thing, it makes the world a little brighter and we drive out a little bit of ugliness. We do every time we do something that's good. Every good work does that. We drive out darkness. Ephesians chapter 5. Still writing to Christians, Paul says this, beginning in verse 11. Paul says, "And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it's shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret." We are to dispel darkness. When we have a chance to expose and dispel darkness, we need to do that as well. We need to drive darkness out of this world every chance we get, even regardless of how small it is. I remember several years ago when they were first starting to put casinos in just over by Miami, or just actually between Seneca and there, I guess, is where it is. I don't go there very often, but it's just on the other side of Seneca. Bob Hampton was preaching at Seneca at the time when they were all the casino people were coming in and talking about how wonderful the world was going to be if they let them put casinos in. He knew from the very beginning that he had no chance of keeping them out. But what did he do? He fought it every single day. Everybody he could talk to, every place he could go, every meeting that they held, he was there to try and dispel the darkness. And every time he went there, he did some good. He made it just that much harder for those casinos to come in. Plus, more and more people heard the truth about what the casinos were going to do. So he was doing exactly what Christians were supposed to do. He was trying to dispel darkness. He was exposing darkness. A lot of people would have just said, "There's no way we're going to keep these casinos out, so there's no point in trying." And they would have quit. They wouldn't even start it. But not him. See, that's not, Christians are supposed to keep on trying to dispel darkness. expose darkness. Every chance, big or little, to make any difference where it is, every opportunity. It's at school, it's at work, it's at wherever. Government, doesn't make any difference. Every time we expose sin and darkness and evil and immorality, we make the world a little brighter place. And in chapter 4 of that same book, Ephesians chapter 4, Paul writes this, and this will close the lesson. He says, "This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God, because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness." What do most of the Gentiles do? They walk in darkness. They walk in uncleanness. They walk in greediness. They're past feeling. Why? Because of the ignorance that's in them. Darkness also means ignorance. Ignorance of God is often shown as darkness. So the last thing I want to point out is that disciples and Christians dispel darkness by teaching the truth. Because most of the world is in ignorance, aren't they? The vast, vast majority of the people are in ignorance concerning God and His Son and the church and salvation. So every time, every opportunity we use to teach the truth, it may only be 2 minutes talking to someone, but we're dispelling a little bit of darkness every time we do that. Every time we meet here and we teach and through singing and everything else, we're dispelling a little bit of darkness in the world. People go by, they say, "Hey, there's the lights on." See, we're dispelling darkness. So we have this obligation as God's people to live in such a way that by our works we dispel darkness, and by our teaching we expose what's wrong, and by our teaching we get rid of some ignorance in the world. Every time we do any of those things, even to a small degree, we make the world a better place, we make it a brighter place, and we get rid of a little bit of darkness. So if we don't get anything else from this lesson, we need to understand that even the smallest little thing we do like that gets rid of a little bit of darkness. And that's why it's important. Because if we don't do it, the world's going to stay just as dark as it's ever been. But everything we do like that, teaching and living and reproving and exposing and all of those things, makes the world a little bit brighter and a little bit better place. And the Bible says that when we come to Christ, when we are born again, we come up a new creature. A creature that's bright and clean and free of corruption and ready to go out into the world and influence it in a positive way. And if you desire that, please come this evening as David leads us in this song.